Welcome, everyone, to episode 218 of the NBA podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and today we're going to go through some of the early returns on the 2019 playoffs. We're going to go through every series and talk about what we've seen so far, some adjustments we think that we might see moving forward, and give some updated predictions. Before we get to all that, a reminder that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. In our bio, you can find our Twitter handles, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes, so please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. And we're now being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Joining me today, as always, is my very stable genius of a co-host, Morten Jensen. How's it going, Mort?
It's going well, Brian. Was this episode 218?
Yeah.
Was that how many points the Warriors were up on the Clippers before?
Actually, there was a 3-1 involved. I'm not sure in what order, if there was something separating, a hyphen separating maybe. But
well, let's ignore the hyphen and just say they blew a 3-1 lead.
Correct. Yeah. NBA Twitter has been like both a great place and a horrible place over the start of the playoffs. It's like when a reviled team chokes in a magnificent way, it's great. But then, like, we've had some just very dumb conversations on NBA Twitter as well.
Of course.
Which we will get to as we go through these series. So,
Do you think the Warriors would actually have preferred to being up by 40 just so they could avoid the 3-1 jokes?
Or, like, 15. Like, I think they would rather just, like, all right, we blew a 15-point lead. That's fine. Just, like, not... Or if they blew a 30-point lead or a 32-point lead, just not 31. It had to be 31. God. Yeah, it's not like... I read every story from The Athletic about it. I know, like, in one of them, Quinn Cook was like, oh, man, I bet Twitter's having fun with that one.
Yeah. Well, we were.
Yeah, at least they knew. Before we get to Clippers Warriors, let's start with Denver San Antonio, since I think that's been, frankly, probably the most competitive series out of all of these. I think, first of all, let's just acknowledge, like, the playoffs have been more surprising, I think, than we expected coming in. I mean, there were four splits so far, and we have yet to see game two of Houston, Utah, Milwaukee, Detroit, Boston, Indiana. But out of the five series that have had two games played, only Portland OKC is the only one that the home team won both games. And that was the one where the home team was the underdog in the series. So
exactly.
So a lot of upsets so far. Denver San Antonio, we expected was going to be probably the most evenly matched first round series, and so far that's played out exactly as expected. You know, we said it coming into the series that Denver out talents San Antonio, but the Spurs just have so much more experience and playoff experience. And that, I mean, for the first seven quarters of this series, you could really see that. Like, the Spurs just out executed the Nuggets in game one down the stretch. And then, you know, game two, they're up double-digit points throughout a lot of the first half. And then into the second half, they had as much of a 19-point lead. It's like every time the Nuggets would start to mount a rally, the Spurs would either call a timeout to just kill the momentum in the arena or just hit, you know, like hit a pull-up jumper and just like quash that momentum too. But then, of course, the fourth quarter comes, and Jamal Murray, man, he's 0 of 8, 3 points in the first three quarters, goes off for 21 points on 8 of 9 shooting in the fourth. And I don't even, I wish he didn't even take that last shot, because it was, like, meaningless at the time. He could have just had a perfect quarter, but he effectively did. Like, this is the Jamal Murray, I mean, you and I have been high on this kid a lot, and I know he's streaky, but he's young, so it's expected. But, like, this is the upside we see with this kid. This is why we keep saying, if you're going to look for an archetype of a point guard to put next to Nikola Jokic, Jamal Murray's that guy.
Or just any ball-dominant player, really.
Yeah.
Because remember how often we talk about point guards that shouldn't necessarily be ball-dominant and should be the rich man's version of Derek Fisher?
Yeah.
Like, Jamal Murray is it. And that's just not just a rich man, but, like, that's a billionaire's version of Derek Fisher,
right,
obviously.
Right.
But, I mean, he's the type of guy you can actually put into virtually every team because he'll play off the bounce. And if you have a dominant, ball-dominant point guard, then he'll just move to the off-guard position. Like, He's multifunctional, which just helps Denver out so much. And he's so dynamic, too.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, kudos to Mike Malone, I think, because after the game, you know, during the game, it was like they're getting beaten so much and he just looked so lost. There was starting to be some clamoring for, okay, maybe we should just roll with Monte Morris. Or, like, let's throw Isaiah Thomas in because this, you know, it looks like this series is slipping away from the Nuggets. They're about to go down 0-2 at home, heading back to San Antonio where the Spurs have been lights out this season. Like, if they don't steal this game, it's over. Yeah. But Mike Malone after the game was like, no, I know how important these minutes are and this development time is for Jamal Murray. And what message does it send if I pull him right now? It said, yep. You know, then he's like, coach has no faith in me. Coach doesn't have my back. So he was like, basically, I'm going to ride or die with Jamal Murray. And to his credit, it worked out just at the nick of time.
Yeah, and here I just want to give a shout out to TJ McBride, friend of the podcast, TJ McBride from Mile High Sports, who actually had a huge piece up this morning, I think for 2,200 words or something.
Wow.
On Mike Malone and basically how he viewed game two and his belief is in his own players that is definitely worth a read. So Mile High Sports, TJ McBride's article on Malone. You shouldn't miss it.
Nice. Yeah. I'm afraid TJ might have muted me last night because definitely I accidentally reversed Jake's the Spurs midway through the third quarter, and to which I apologize to Sarah and Jesse, but I said something along the lines of, like, Jesse's impending retweet Armageddon is going to be legendary because, you know, coming, like, weeks leading up to this series, he's been saying, like, I'm excited for Aldridge to outplay Jokic and just start retweeting a bunch of bad takes, and, you know, midway through the third, it looks like that was going to happen in less than a week. But now I think this is a series again. So they head back to San Antonio. The Spurs, again, have been really good at home. They should be encouraged. I mean, like, yeah, they got buried by Jamal Murray in an avalanche in the fourth, and Paul Millsap also had a really good game. But LaMarcus Aldridge has been fine. He's just doing LaMarcus Aldridge things. DeMar DeRozan had 31 points last night, game high.
Right.
Yep. You know, he's kind of struggled a bit in the first game, but the whole, like, playoff choker DeMar DeRozan narrative has not totally come to fruition yet. Also, Derek White is just an animal, man. Mm-hmm. Just when him and DeJounte Murray are paired together next year, I don't know how anyone scores against them. It's terrifying. Like,
yeah.
Every Western Conference backcourt that faces the Spurs in these playoffs, whether it's just the Nuggets or they move on, should be thankful that this is the last time you're ever going to score against the Spurs.
Here's what I love about Derek White. So when he came in, I was pretty high on him as well, because I found his experience level and professionalism just to be, you know, unmistakably, like, it was just so absolutely, you know, transparent that he was going to fit into that system.
Yeah,
and he's active. He has obviously every player has an ego. But do you catch my drift if I say he has no ego in that grander scheme of things sense?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, he's not in it for his own gain necessarily. Like, there's a team concept built, you're just hard-drived into him, or hardwired, it's called. I just love the way that he competes. Like, all the intangible stuff that you can talk about a player or you can mention about a player, like, he just fits that box.
Yeah.
Like, he's such a guy, and I would have just killed to have his prime coincide with Tim's back in the day. Could you imagine Derek White on that, you know, the legendary Spurs teams? Like, he would have fit right in.
Yeah.
Perfectly.
Oh, for sure. You know what I would have killed for? The Sixers to have traded up and not chosen Anze Pozechnik's, but instead chosen Derek White, who went 4 picks later. Thanks as always, Brian Colangelo.
Do you think he would have had the same development? The same drive would have been there, but he just seems like such a Spursy player.
Yeah.
That I'm not sure.
I remember, like, I feel like I tweeted that night, like, of course the Spurs get this guy. Like, he is the quintessential, like, oh crap, he fell to 29, the Spurs got him, and he's going to be a monster in 2 years. And lo and behold, here we go.
He's also the tallest 6'4 player I think I've seen. Like, he does not look 6'4, and he just certainly doesn't play 6'4.
Yeah, yeah. He's just a defensive pest. So I'm excited to see what happens in this series. I picked Spurs in six coming in. I believe you had the Nuggets in six or seven.
Yeah.
What's your updated prediction?
Same so far.
I'm waffling between Spurs in six and Nuggets in seven. I'm a little shook after last night. Just because, like, again, the Spurs had the series in the bag for the first seven quarters. I don't want to overreact to one quarter, but I could also see this becoming an avalanche, like snowballing into an avalanche for Jamal Murray, where he's just got that confidence back. And, like, for a shooter like him, where he is so streaky, getting that confidence and getting over those playoff jitters is huge. So, I think this is the best first round series either way that we're going to. Moving forward, I think it's going to be the most entertaining one.
Yeah, it's definitely on the watch list. That's for sure. I mean, and I will say this, like, it's not going to surprise me one bit if San Antonio pulls this out. I mean, I'm sitting here selecting Denver, but I wouldn't be surprised whatsoever.
Right. Yeah, it feels like the most up-in-the-air series of anyone.
Right. Yeah. So before, you know, Spurs fans just flame my mentions, like,
Oh, no.
It wouldn't be some sort of... you know, hot take to say that you guys come in off of left field and take it. Like, obviously, you're right there. Like, right. This is completely up in the air.
Correct. Before we get to Warriors-Clippers, hey, Mort, are you tired of clickbait, ads, pop-up videos, talking head hyperbole, big market bias, and data selling? Are you tired of soap operas, wild speculation, and unnamed sources? Are you tired of padding the stats of CEOs and shareholders while your favorite content creators get paid pennies for their work? At bballwriters.com, they are too. That's why they created the Basketball Writers. At bballwriters.com, they concentrate on just the game and everything they love about it. The NBA, WNBA, EuroLeague, fantasy basketball, and many more corners of the hoops universe. All in one place on a blazingly fast, clean site that lets you choose which writer to directly support while still enjoying all of the content from the whole team. Elevate the conversation, elevate the game. We'll see you at bballwriters.com, and don't forget to enter the code THENBAPOD for 10% off your annual, monthly, or daily subscription. That is the NBA Pod. Reminder, you can find both Mort and I on there. I had a preview of Sixers-Nets, or a preview of Game 2 of Sixers-Nets when I was despondent after Game 1. So you could go back, and we'll get to that series in a second. But plenty of good playoff coverage about all the series. So bballwriters.com, the NBA
Pod. And draft coverage. And draft coverage.
And draft coverage.
Yep. Yeah, because I have a piece out where I basically play NBA Cupid.
Oh, yeah.
Draft Cupid. Yeah.
I like that. Yeah.
Yep. So and it's part one. I don't know when part two is going to hit, but it'll be soon.
Nice. Yeah. So bballwriters.com, put in the code the NBA Pod for 10% off. Okay. So let's go to Warriors Clippers. First game of the series, it looked like exactly what we expected. The Warriors just have too much talent for the Clippers. Second game of the series, it looked like what we expected. The Warriors have too much talent. They go up 31 points, as we have mentioned. The Clippers just don't know when to quit. And I love this about them. Like, they are the only team, I think really the only team in the league that would not have folded in that scenario. Like, most, I mean, when the Nets got down that big in Game 2, Kenny Atkinson would just call them the bench for the whole fourth quarter. He's like, there's no point. The Clippers, it's just like, I don't know what it is about them. I think they're just like this gritty, hard-nosed, like the Pat Beverly, Montrezl Harrells of the world, just refuse to back down. So they come back, erase a 31-point lead, steal home court advantage. Mm-hmm. Before we get to any analysis in the series, though, let's take a moment of silence for DeMarcus Cousins, who suffered some degree of a quad tear. We don't know how severe. There is slight hope that he would be back for the finals, so that implies to me it's not like a full tear, thankfully.
Yeah, it's non-surgical as well, right?
Yeah, so hopefully he should be healthy for free agency, for next season. Like, it doesn't sound like it is as serious as the Achilles that he suffered last season, thankfully. But it still just sucks so much, man. Like, the guy worked so hard to get back to this point. I'm worried that he's got two major injuries hanging over him going into this free agency. I just wanted to see Boogie win a ring, and he still might, but it's you know, it's not the same as him being on the court to do it. So thoughts and prayers up for Boogie Cousins, or DeMarcus Cousins, sorry, Sorry, DeMarcus. I just love that nickname, man. It's too good.
I get it.
And, like, I want to say this as a disclaimer, because in either this episode or the coming episodes, we will end up talking about how the Warriors move forward without him. And, you know, I've seen a lot of analysis. Like, yeah, it's not going to matter all that much in the long run. And I get that, but I also don't want to diminish what DeMarcus brought to that team.
Right. No, I mean, obviously, he didn't play a full season. And when he did come back, there was, and there still is, you know, an adjustment period.
Yeah.
Where he needs to figure out, you know, how to get his shots and what his role is defensively, all these things. And when this happened, though, it was just like, that was just a punch to the gut. Or the heart, really, because, like, this was, you know, his first playoffs. Like, he was so happy just to be there. The only silver lining I can find with this is that maybe he returns to Golden State because of this. Like, maybe the market just won't be there, which would suck for him, and that's not a silver lining for him,
right,
obviously, but that would be a silver lining for the fans, because I actually like seeing DeMarcus in Golden State. I know that that goes against the whole, you know, parody angle that a lot of fans are preaching about, but I kind of like it. I think his style, I think his arrogance, really, because let's just be honest, he has a certain level of arrogance to him that is, when applied correctly, extremely helpful to him as a basketball player.
Yeah.
And I think he kind of fits that team, because they're also unselfish, and what I think they need this dog that is just very much in, you know, able to stir things up, both on and off the court. I would love to see him, like, just extend his stay in Golden State. And having said that, my first priority would have him being healthy and earning a lot of money in the open market.
Yeah.
But given that that's unfortunately maybe not the case, then let's see what happens this summer.
Yeah. I still have faith the Lakers max him either way. but I don't think we need to go too deep into the series. The big question looming over it is, was this upset just the Warriors getting complacent and, you know, not taking the rest of the game seriously? Or are they, you know, did the Clippers show something in game two that makes you think, oh man, like they have not even a legit shot, but they have a chance to actually knock the Warriors off?
I think it would be so cruel and unfair to put this on Golden State as them not showing up or not responding.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this was a hell of a performance from the Clippers.
Yeah.
And I think just disregarding that or putting that on someone else is just wrong. Because you actually said it at the top. You know, this is a team that just doesn't know how to quit. It's been like this for at least half a season now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I actually wrote a piece about this on my Danish Patreon, because that's a team, the Clippers, where even if they fail miserably in free agency, they still have a good team.
Yeah.
Like, they've put themselves up so great, you can't really go wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if they don't get Kawhi or Kyrie or Durant or whatever, like, that's fine. They will have a young core, they'll have very manageable contracts, and they'll have a work ethic and a camaraderie and a team chemistry level that's easy to build upon. Like, players, maybe not superstar players, but, you know, good quality starters would be interested in going there. Like, they've made themselves very, very attractive. I'm extremely impressed. And I think part of it is Doc just kind of going back to focusing on coaching.
Yeah.
Like, no more having to deal with agents and players and whatnot. Like, well, yeah, only players, but in a basketball sense, right?
Right.
Like,
right.
No more negotiating. Like, now it's just basketball. Yeah. I think that's opened everything up for him. And Steve Ballmer, you know, to his credit, just, he got over new owner syndrome real quick.
Yeah. I mean, you said it. I think, and I'm writing this, I don't know where it's going to go up, but, like, the Clippers, game two, there is no better free agent pitch than what the Clippers did in game two.
Right.
And so, like, moving forward, I don't care what happens in this series, they're going to be, if not the top free agent destination this summer, they're going to be one of the very top. And I'm terrified. Like, if this team adds Kawhi Leonard next year, I'm terrified of them.
Yeah.
as rumored, you know, he's had rumored interest for a while, and Lloyd knows they're after him too. So, yeah, they're in great shape either way. I still think this thing ends in five. I mean, I think this is a nice wake-up call for the Warriors, and I think they're going to come out in game three and just blow the doors off. I think Kevin Durant was uncharacteristically sloppy with the ball in game two. He had 9 turnovers. I think Pat Beverly has just been annoying the hell out of him. But, I mean, he's got, what, like a 10-inch size difference? I think they know he needs to win that matchup if they're going to win this series. Steph Curry got into foul trouble in game two, which likely will not be the case moving forward. So I think the Warriors are still going to cruise. But again, like, shouts to the Clippers, man. This is one hell of a performance. And I wish them the best this summer. I am very glad the Sixers not in the Western Conference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So side note on that, because I actually got a question from a friend of mine, which was very interesting. I want to relay it here. So because of the Clippers now, they've changed their culture. They are where they are right now. Like, it's like the CP3 era is done with. The Donald Sterling era is done with. Like, all of that is just back. Mm. Is now the time to rebrand themselves with a new name?
Mm.
Like, just going all in because they have, like, steady ownership and just rid themselves of, you know, the Clippers aura?
Do you know what I mean? I don't think they need to. Like, they've rid themselves of the aura, though.
When people say the Clippers, like, it's always going to have certain, I don't know, certain connections.
I mean, I understand the question. I, like, get what they're saying. But I think what they're doing on the court is they don't, like, changing the name is not going to overhaul the franchise. It's having stable ownership, having a stable general manager in front office, having a good coach, having, like, gritty, hard-nosed players. Right,
which they've done.
Yeah. So, like, I frankly think, like, changing the meaning of Clippers to be what it is better than, like, changing the name to the Los Angeles whatever.
That would be a great name, though.
Yeah. The Los Angeles Hollywood.
Hey, Kawhi, come be a whatever.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Yes, that is perfect for my personality.
Yeah.
All right, Maury, let's go east. Let's go to Philly, Brooklyn. And I am very thankful that we did not record on Monday, because I would have had a lot more angry words to say. But let me start off by addressing Philly Twitter, which, going into the series, completely underrated the Nets. Said they sucked, said they were below average on both sides of the ball, said there were no reason to worry about them. Game one and the first half of game two is why you worry about the Brooklyn Nets. They have a lot of guards. They have a lot of three-point shooters. The Sixers' pick-and-roll defense sucks. We saw what happened. Like, they can hang with... I mean, Philly played awful in game one. Ben Simmons was just terrible across the board. Joel Embiid has been gutting through this left knee injury, but he is not himself. Jimmy Butler was incredible in game one. He's the only reason that game was remotely competitive. Game two, Philly played pretty well in the first half, and the Nets hung with them. It was a one-point lead at halftime. You know, like, I think they hit, like, 10 threes in the first half alone. Like, the Nets were a matchup to fear, and we're seeing why. But then in the third quarter of game two, I guess Brett Brown just lit into the players at halftime, apparently, and was criticizing their defensive effort in particular. So then they come out in the third quarter and just absolutely, you know, that was the other side of this Nets Philly matchup, is like, Philly has too much top end talent, and the third quarter put that on display. But that said, it feels like Philly stole the momentum back in the series, but the Nets did what they had to do. They came into Philly, they stole one of two, they're going back home with home court advantage. So, going into Thursday's game three, how do you feel about this series, Mark?
Oh, I am extremely insecure if I'm a Philly fan right now.
Yeah.
I'm basically speaking on your behalf, I feel like.
Because
you've mentioned this ad nauseum on this podcast. Like, Philly can't guard the point of attack.
Right.
And the Nets have three points of attack. So, and that was very apparent in game one.
Mm-hmm.
I will say this, though. Had Ben Simmons shown up in game one, it probably would have swung Philly's way.
Yeah.
So in that sense, I think he's the ultimate X factor for this one. Yeah. I mean, if he shows up and he's actually engaged, and I don't know what it was. I saw game one, and, you know, you can never really go off of solely body language, but it just seems like he wasn't engaged. He wasn't involved in the plays. Like, he was just pouting, not really doing anything, just moving around, going through the motions. And I think that's the first time I've ever seen Ben that way before. Like, yeah. That dispassionate, really.
Yeah. Because, like, the Celtics took him out of the game by giving him no respect, but
right. He
wasn't even trying to force the issue. Like, it, you know, it's such a cliche to say, like, the more physical, aggressive team wins playoff games. But watch game one and watch game two. Watch Ben Simmons in both of those games. And it really was just a change of mindset. Like, Ben Simmons was not looking to push the ball and attack and force the action in game one. And in game two, him and Embiid, frankly. Like, you know, Embiid was very clearly hurting in game one. Took 5 threes in total. I think three or four of them came in the first quarter.
And three of them basically came off of one possession.
Yeah, yeah. And it's like, in game two, I don't even remember if he took a single three. He maybe took one or two, but
I don't think he did.
Yeah, like, every time he caught it, he would do his little pump fake at the three-point line, which never works or rarely works. But then he would just go and attack because Jared Allen wouldn't fall for it. And then he's like, okay, you're giving me 15 feet of runway. I'm just going to dribble twice, back my big butt down, spin, and I'm going to have a 7-foot hook shot. And Ben Simmons was the same way. Like, all right, you're going to give me that much space. I'm going to go attack. I'm going to attack the paint and force the action there. Brett Brown deserves credit. I think he made a lot of smart adjustments from game one to game two. I think they installed, you know, the Nets were top blocking Tobias and JJ in particular, really trying to prevent them from getting the dribble handoffs. They're so prevalent in Philly's offense. So they installed a lot more backdoor cuts in game two, which I think, especially against the Nets zone, the Nets, like, have really, you know, the Nets are one of the teams that have used the zone the most this year, and Philly is just tearing it apart. So I don't know if that's a look they can keep going to. TJ McConnell did not get a minute before garbage time in that game too. Unless he's hitting three pointers or shooting three pointers, he just refuses to shoot them, and he just cramps the spacing so much. And, you know,
so is he a coward?
He takes them just very reluctantly. But he's just too undersized against Russell, LeVert, Dinwiddie. So getting James Ennis back for game two is huge. And it's just absurd that having one competent wing off the bench makes that much of a difference, but it really does. Cause then you can have Jimmy as the backup point guard, which makes, you know, you could just stay big against the Nets, which is their one weakness. Like, Philly has a clear advantage in terms of front court size. Shout out to Boban. I think my favorite thing from game two was Boban just raining in foul line jumpers, and then the camera's cutting to Dikembe Mutombo, who is having the best time of his life. He's just, like, cackling and clapping next to Allen Iverson every time, which was great. But Boban played well. Like, this is the one series in the playoffs where he's going to be a factor because the Nets don't have the stretch fives to punish him, and they have... I mean, they've rightly, every time he's on the floor, they attack him with Dinwiddie. They try to get switches and put him in the pick and roll, and he has no chance. Jared Dudley missing game two is big for the Nets. He made a huge impact in game one. We'll see about his availability moving forward, but I would be surprised if he's not available in game three. So I'm with you. I'm not feeling confident that the Sixers win this series still.
I'm not even confident. I'm nervous.
Yeah.
I'm not even at the point where I'm like,
no, right.
I'm nervous. I'm sitting there just eating my tea or eating my nails. Just no.
Yeah. I'm not picking Sixers in five. I went with Sixers in six going into the series a lot because I wasn't sure if Embiid was going to play game one.
Right.
I think he's going to gut it out every game this series. I'm still picking Sixers in six. I think the Nets, I think they split in Brooklyn. Philly wins in the game five at home and then comes out to Brooklyn and closes it out.
I'm leaning towards Philly as well because, like you mentioned, the top-tier talent is there.
Mm-hmm.
Also, Jimmy Butler showed me something in Game 1.
Yeah.
I've followed Butler for years and years. I know what he's capable of.
Mm-hmm.
But I was kind of afraid that meniscus tear from last year had sort of limited him as a player because at very few times in during his Philly tenure, at least, had he stepped up in this manner. Like, he was just aggressive all throughout, getting to the line. He looked like, I tweeted at one point, this is Chicago Jimmy Butler right here.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was. Like, he just kind of had the opportunity, maybe because Embiid wasn't available to the same extent that he usually is or as dominant.
Yeah.
That just gave Jimmy, you know, carte blanche on with the ball. But he just made the most of it. Game two, that was just a completely different showing from him. But that's, you know, he had an engaged Ben Simmons. You know, Joel was not jacking three, so he was more efficient that way. So it's just intriguing to kind of trying to figure out what Jimmy can and can't do in this day and age. Like, I think you will need more from him going forward to just remain a championship contender, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, they didn't need him to be Game 1 Jimmy Butler in Game 2 because they had so many other guys come through, like Simmons, Embiid.
Right.
Tobias Harris woke up a little bit. J.J. Redick woke up a little bit. But I'm with you. Like, they need all of their stars playing at a high level.
Yeah, you know, you can't go from 36 to 7 points.
Yeah, right. Like, to get, you know, not only to get past Brooklyn, but to get past whoever they face in the second round, most likely Toronto. So,
right.
Yeah, it's... I'm still nervous, but... I'm feeling much better than I did 48 hours ago. I can say that much.
Mm.
Another fan base that was... I don't even know if they were shook after Game 1. I feel like they had to expect it. But Toronto, Orlando, man. No matter who,
both fan bases were shook.
Yeah, like, no matter who is on the effing Raptors, they just can't ever win a Game 1. It's just like, you might as well start the series at Game 2 and just have Toronto down 0-1. Because there's no point. They're just always going to be done. But,
well, then we wouldn't have seen DJ Augustine just flat out ball. That was amazing.
I know. In the year 2019, DJ Augustine had a 25-point playoff game. Incredible.
But remember how much we've talked about how Orlando was missing a point guard. They really didn't have anyone.
Yeah.
And then he went up against Kyle Lowry.
Yeah.
And just obliterated this all-star.
I know. It's amazing. Yeah, I'm excited for him to outplay Markel Fultz next year. It's going to go really well for the Orlando fan base. But Toronto responded with a seismic punch in Game 2. Kawhi Leonard just single-handedly annihilated them. Kyle Lowry bounced back. He had the goose egg in Game 1. Comes back, I think it was like 22 points on 8 of 13 shooting. Pascal Siakam has 19 and 10. You know, 111-82, they just blow the Magic out of the water. And I think this is what we expected this series to be. Like, it's just the Magic, unless DJ Augustine is going off for 25 points a game, and Terrence Ross is coming in off the bench and pouring in a lot, Jonathan Isaac, Nick Vucevic, Aaron Gordon are all playing well. They just don't have the firepower to keep up with the Raptors when they're hitting on all cylinders.
Right. This was the wake-up call.
Yeah.
Like, we talked about Golden State and wake-up calls, but this is the one. I mean, because let's just be honest, everyone, you know, looking at that series was like, that's a sweep, right? I mean,
I said some five. I said five.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, because I knew the Raptors, it's just their history. There's no way they make anything easy.
Okay, but in terms of talent level, like that's that should be a sweep, like... Theoretically, Orlando doesn't have a point guard. But then, you know, there we go.
Yeah.
So everyone came in with the expectation that Orlando is going to Orlando.
Right.
And they've been horrible. And a lot of people are under the belief they shouldn't even be in the playoffs when you think about the quality of their roster and just how many crap teams they put together over the years. And this isn't particularly better. Like, this is basically the result of Vooch having a career year. Let's be honest.
Right.
I mean, that first game obviously was very exciting to watch as, like, an NBA observer.
Yeah.
I'll say as much.
Yeah.
You know, because the more excitement, the better. But the entire league was just shook. I mean, I was on Twitter at the same time. And it was like, so many people were like, this is actually happening right now.
I know. I was so grateful because, you know, Philly and Brooklyn was the first game of the playoffs and Philly just got completely pantsed. And I was like, oh my God, all I'm going to hear about for the next 48 hours is this.
Yep.
And then Toronto, the next game comes and craps the bed. I'm like, thank you, Toronto. You stole the thunder. I appreciate it. But yeah, I mean, whereas Brooklyn and Philly and Denver, San Antonio still feel slightly up in the air. Toronto has all the momentum back in this series.
Oh,
right?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. For sure. So, look, the 37-point game from Kawhi was a statement.
Yeah.
That was just him going, you know what, that I'm not going to allow this.
Right.
And it's also, you know what, that it should be really encouraging for the Raptors franchise and the fan base, because that means he's invested.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah.
Like, he looked like a guy who was invested in game two.
Right. Yeah, or at least didn't want to get skunked in the first round by the Orlando
that,
Magic.
That could be another motivational factor, but I'm trying to be nice to the Toronto fans.
Yeah, that's good. So what's your updated prediction for this series?
Five, maybe six. Like, maybe Orlando does it again. Like, maybe Toronto, you know, gets overconfident after going up like 3-1.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I could see it, right?
Yeah, yeah, I'm still staying Raptors in five. I just,
no, I get it.
I didn't think game one was going to be the one they lost, but in retrospect, of course it was the one they lost. Of course. Okay, let's go back out west. And Portland OKC. Yeah. This is the one series where the higher seeded team going in was the underdog. I know Denver San Antonio was close, but Denver was still favored. OKC entered this series as the favorite. Portland has just blasted them.
I'm so excited.
I mean, the first game was close, at least. But, you know, game two, it was just the Dame and CJ show.
Right. And that was with Enes Kanter not being as big of a factor as in game one.
Yeah.
I mean, look, I said this before we started recording because I kind of made fun of you because we had the big argument 5 or 6 months ago where I said Dame Lillard is so much better than Russ.
Mm.
It's, and you were like, oh! Yeah. And I had Thunder fans in my mentions, but look, it's so true, man. Yeah. I mean, Dame is just a smarter basketball player. Like, when it really comes down to it, I get that Russ is just putting up triple-doubles. I get that he has the athletic advantage. I get all of that. But Dame is just a smarter player.
Yeah.
Like, he just understands, you know, shot selection.
Right.
You know, timely shot-making, when to move the ball, when to be aggressive, when to lay off a little bit. He's just... he's really a savant when it comes to on-court production. And people haven't really wised up to that yet because the word on Dame is still great offensive player, just at best below average defensively. Like, that's still how you sum up Dame. And it's just not necessarily true anymore. Like, he's not going to be on any all-defensive teams.
Right.
That's not what I'm saying. But, like, he is so brilliant offensively and understands team defense extremely well.
Yeah.
He's continuously one of the most underrated players in the league. And I think over the first two games here, he's just shown it, not just off of his volume, but his understanding. And he's also, like, really emotionally invested in this series. Like, he wants the better of Russ. Like, he wants to come out victorious big time on this one.
Oh, for
sure. He's got some juices flowing, and I love it.
Yeah, on the defense point, he's had 3 steals each of the first 2 games of the series. Mm-hmm. He had 2 blocks in game 2 as well. So, yeah, I mean, he's, as you said, he's not an all-defensive caliber player, but he can make some impact plays on D. And I'm with you. Like, I think last year's playoff run left a really bad taste in his mouth because Drew Holiday just erased him in that series. And so this season, he's come back. It's like Lillard time again. And I said it last night, like, the NBA playoffs are more fun when Dame Lillard is cooking. Like, it sucked to see him get punked like he did last year, even though...
and the year before.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, I'm happy that CJ McCollum could finally go back to Jennifer and say that he won a playoff game. That was good.
That was an amazing post-game question. Was it Fred Katz? Who was it?
I don't know. But, yeah, it was spectacular.
That was amazing.
On the David Ross point, I agree with you, like, right now, Dame is better than Russ. I still think Russ has a higher ceiling than Dame, but he has a significantly lower floor. And we've seen far more closer to the floor games than we have closer to the ceiling games. Like,
right.
Like, Dame can get erased like he did last year by Drew Holiday, but he's not going to necessarily shoot you out of a game. Like, the shots he's throwing up, even if he's missing a bunch, they're not usually, like, really ill-advised shots. Just like sometimes you're facing an all-defensive guard and, you know, he's making life really hard on you. Russ's shot selection, and this has been the big complaint with him for years, his shot selection and his turnovers, he takes some of the dumbest threes, just these pull-up jumpers, like three-point jumpers in transition, where you're not a good enough shooter to do that. And it just stymies any momentum you have because, yeah, sometimes you hit them, but more often than not, you don't. And then that leads to a long rebound, a run out, and 2 points on the other end or 3 points on the other end. And he had a couple of those in game two where it's just like, I don't know what you're doing right now. You're 1 of 6 from three, finished 5 of 20 from the field. Paul George was 11 of 20. He's the only guy, him and Steven Adams are the only guys who showed up offensively in game two. But, I mean, the Thunder right now have a math problem on their hands because they can't hit threes. And the Blazers can. And that's been the difference in this series. They also, I mean, Paul George's shoulder, he was a game time decision in game one, plays through it. The next day says his shoulder's totally fine, which very clearly it is not. But he at least had a better game in game two. They're only going to go as far as Paul George can take them. Like, they were as good as they were early in the season because Paul George is having an MVP caliber season. And then after the All-Star break, when he started slumping because of the shoulder, so did they. So I feel like this series comes down to Paul George's shoulder, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. Also, shout out to Al-Farouq Aminu and Mo Harkless. They've both been playing really good defense. They're not, you know, they don't show up on the box score all that often, or like, you're not super impressed. Neither of them are going to go off at 30 points, but they're both just like gritty players and they're making life hard on Paul George. So,
and they don't demand the ball, which is terrific offensively, at least, which gives, you know, Dame and CJ the necessary volume and freedom that they need. Seth Curry too, by the way. Shout out to Seth.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it was game one where they were talking about him, like the impact he makes. And then he comes, as they're talking about him, he comes up with a steal at half court, dribbles down, pull up three in transition, and nails it. It was, ugh. Someone give that guy real money this summer, please. Or is he signed two more years or another year?
No. He's a free agent.
Good.
By the way, just to round out Russ. So in game one, if you noticed, like, he had to drive so many times. Like, he finished with a lot of layups.
Yeah.
Because on so many occasions, like, he would get either a high screen or he would just get the step on his defender and he would just glide in for a layup. Like, that was there. That play was there far more frequently than what he utilized it for.
Right.
Because then he would counter on the next possession with, like, a pull-up long two or a three. It. Like, where it's just, you have the drive. You have a layup and you're converting them. Like, get in towards the basket at the very least. At some point, you'll get hacked and then you'll go to the free throw line. Like, that's, just play it smart, man. It's so obvious.
Yeah. I mean, Enes Kanter, you said he had a hell of a game in game one, 20 points, 18 rebounds. Yeah. If you're the Thunder, you need to play him off the floor. That should be your primary objective. Like, he is too slow-footed defensively, especially against an explosive guard like Russ. You need to routinely get him in pick and rolls and either leave an open driving lane to the basket or give it to a shooter not named Russ to take some shots, you know, that he leaves wide open. But the Thunder are just such a frustrating team because they should be better. But it's just like this has just been their MO all year. Like, they just, they don't have, they need like one more reliable scorer, I feel like.
So obviously he took time off of personal reasons, and you have to respect that for whatever it was. But, you know, Alex Abrines.
Yeah.
He would have helped so much in this series because he would have been able to spot up and stretch the floor.
For sure.
So let's hope that, you know, I know they released him, right? I believe so. Yeah. Let's hope that everything turns out well for him and whatever he has going on, and then he can make a return to the Thunder eventually.
Yeah.
And be the player that they're hoping that he can be, because he would have made such a difference in this series.
Or they can just steal Seth Curry this summer, so someone can finally pay Seth Curry what he deserves to make.
That would be a very, very smart idea. I've been basically banging the Seth Curry drum since 2016. So far, nobody... Yeah.
I know. God.
Was it 2 years, $7 million he signed for in debt? No, two years, $6 million.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yep.
It's outrageous.
And then he got 1 year to $2 million and 80 this year.
Ugh. Okay, so I picked OKC in six in this series. I'm off of that. What's your prediction?
I picked OKC too. Yeah. Because of their defense, but yep. Here's the thing. You kind of need offense to win games. Surprise, surprise. Right. And they haven't really provided any of it. And look, I'm just going to be real. Russ looks terrible. Yeah. Absolutely terrible.
Yeah.
They're not going to continue shooting 15% from downtown. They're definitely going to take a few wins uh-huh. at some point. But I probably have Portland in six.
I think I'm doing Portland in five. I don't know. I mean, like, I know game one was close, but unless Russ plays smarter, which I don't, I don't know. We'll see. Game three is going to be the big swing game. Like, if OKC can't win game three, it's definitely Portland in four or five. But if they do win game three, it's a series again. So we'll see.
Also, the percentage of coming back after a 2-0 deficit is pretty low, right?
Yeah.
Not that that means anything. It's just interesting.
Right. Yeah. It's not, not great. Okay. Let's go. So the other three series, we're recording this on Wednesday, so all three of these series play tonight. They're all at one game apiece right now. So we don't have as much to draw upon, but we can at least start with Houston, Utah.
Which I did not see. So okay. This is all you.
Good. Well, here's all I have to say is, and I said this in our outline, to throw in a topical Game of Thrones reference, because I finally got to this point in the series. James Harden flayed the Jazz like Ramsey Bolton flayed three on Greyjoy. Like, just absolutely, the Jazz tried the whole Milwaukee Bucks forced him to one side strategy, and James Harden's like, what are you doing, guys? I'm not here for this nonsense.
I'm James Harden.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
He had 29 points, 10 assists, 8 rebounds, in only 33 minutes. Just completely annihilated them as a scorer and a passer. The Rockets had 7 guys in double figures. It was just like a really impressive, well-rounded effort from them. The Jazz, here's the one thing I don't want this series to become, which it already somewhat has, is a referendum on Rudy Gobert's Defensive Player of the Year candidacy. Because A, it's a regular season award, so this stuff doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And B, this is arguably the worst matchup in the NBA for him. Maybe the Warriors, especially with DeMarcus Cousins out. But there are a very select handful of teams that can play him off the floor. And I get it. If you're arguing Giannis is DPOY and that you can't play Giannis off the floor, that's fine. But against 27 or 26 other teams, Gobert doesn't get played off the floor and he's the anchor for the Jazz defense. It's just like when you have these explosive ball-dominant guards like James Harden and Chris Paul who could pull up from anywhere and who are consistent shooters from deep, it's really tough for him. He doesn't, doesn't have the foot speed to close out on a guard and then get back to the rim. Like, their strategy is to keep him close to the rim because that's where he's best. That is fine. But, you know, he's still, he had 22 points, 12 rebounds. He had a decent game. I think he was like a minus 20 something that game. So, well, this is what we were afraid of moving into the series. Like, we just didn't think they had the personnel to slow down James Harden. And so far, that's played out exactly as expected. So, I don't know what they can do. I mean, I think the whole, like, force him to wide side strategy, that's not the answer. But I don't know what is. Like, unfortunately, I just think this is a really bad matchup for Utah. And, you know, this is the crappy part of Houston falling to four. Like, if Utah played Portland, they would have a chance to move on. But they just drew the worst possible matchup that they could. And I feel like, so far, what we've seen playing out is what we expected. Now, this could all look really dumb in like 12 hours if Utah beats them tonight and steals home court advantage. But, you know, right now it feels like Houston is very firmly in control of this series.
So here's the problem. When you're trying to guard or limit James Harden, you're effectively saying, I think I can stop or at least limit this era's version of the offensive-minded Michael Jordan.
right.
And I know that people are like, oh, did you just throw the MJ cop? Yeah, offensively I did.
Yeah.
Absolutely. The dude just averaged 36 points in a season. I know, free throws, threes. I get it. I don't care.
Yeah.
Like, in terms of raw volume and in terms of raw efficiency and all that, like, yeah. This is our generation's Michael Jordan from an offensive standpoint. Like, obviously he's not Mike, but he's lacking that other end capabilities. But so when you are set up as a defense and you're going into to this series, you have to have the mindset of how can we just make him work for it?
Mm-hmm.
Like, can we tire him out, you know, eventually? Like, that's what you're hoping for. If you're coming in with great expectations, hey, you know what, let's turn James Harden into a 15-point scorer, that's not going to happen.
Right.
That's not going to happen. And if people put blame on Gobert for not stopping the second best scoring guard of all time,
right?
Because that's what he is when you combine like all the different ways he can score and just how creative he is and all that, like then you have a problem. Like
yeah.
Gobert is not the one you should be pointing fingers at.
Yeah.
If anything, you should just be pointing fingers at Harden and going, "Why are you so damn good?"
Right. And here's what I'd be most concerned about if I'm a Jazz fan. Harden only attempted 3 free throws in game 1. Like, they beat them by 32, and he didn't even need to get to the line all that much. I mean, yes, that's one of the primary ways he scores.
He'll shoot 33 tonight.
Right. Like, he will draw a lot of contact to go in. And maybe that is the Gobert deterrent factor. Maybe he doesn't want to drive in as much as he usually does because he knows Gobert is there. But he also might want to try to get Gobert in foul trouble, as we thought heading into the series. So I'm not feeling great about Utah's chances. I think I had Houston in 5 coming into the series. Nothing I saw in game 1 has me moving off of that stance.
So obviously, like I said at the top, I didn't watch this game. I just didn't have the time for it.
Mm-hmm.
So my pick is unchanged. I was still Houston, but yeah, I mean, look, Utah just needs more offense, right? I mean,
yeah.
Let's stop beating around the bush. They need more. We talked about it, you know, in the previous episode. They need like a Nikola Mirotic or something like that. They need a secondary offensive floor stretcher and creator, and they just don't have it. So that's a problem. You can have the greatest defense on earth, and that's tremendous, but you need more.
Yeah.
They don't have more.
Yeah. I think, unfortunately, they're kind of screwed in this series. Moving forward, I feel like the answer is move Donnie to the point. Let Rubio walk this summer as a free agent, move Donnie to the point. And yeah, you need a combo forward. I know like Andy Bailey of Bleacher Report has been kind of clamoring for that for Utah for a while. They need another reliable scoring combo forward because, yeah, Donnie can't do it all on his own. I mean, Gobert is an impactful offensive player, but he's not creating offense for himself. Like, he led the team with 22 points, but, you know, he's not going to shoot threes, or he's not going to create off the dribble. A lot of it's going to be in close, which is great. Like, he knows his limitations, but you can't rely on him to dig your way out of a playoff series. So it's really just Donnie, and he shot 7 of 18 from the field in game 1.
Mm.
I mean, he was one of only 3 players to take 10 field goal attempts. It's like they just don't have that secondary scoring option that they need.
But you want to move him down to the point? Because,
yeah.
I mean, that could be interesting because we were talking about Jamal Murray earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is a souped-up version of that particular point guard caliber. Like, a non-traditional point guard who will score a ton. But, like, I do think that then you would absolutely need, you know, someone who can initiate the offense.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what Utah does moving forward.
Right.
Okay. Let's go Milwaukee, Detroit, there is nothing to say about this series.
Yeah, there is. Yeah, there is.
Okay.
Giannis
stole
the ball at his own 3-point line, took one dribble, and then dunked it off the other 3-throw line.
Yeah.
Can we just talk about that? I don't care about the series. It's over with. It's done for it. And, you know, a few moments of silence as well for Blake Griffin's season ending. Well, it's unlikely at least, right? I don't think it's been confirmed, but yeah.
I think it was Chris Haynes of Yahoo Sports who reported he is likely to miss this entire series. He is clamoring to play. We'll see what happens, but he had a hell of a season. I don't want him to risk further injury when you're not going to beat this Bucks team either way. Just like,
right.
If you are at no risk of further injury, that's fine, and I can get wanting to go down with the ship, but I can't imagine you are at no further risk of injury. And, like, he's just been so visibly hobbled over the last couple weeks that I don't know. Yeah, that's right.
It's against the Bucks. You don't have a chance. So I think this series, right, does that, you know how people are always saying, like, Duke could beat Cleveland.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, this is the proof, because the difference in quality for these two teams, at least with Detroit without Blake,
that's
approximately Cleveland Duke, I think. This is what we would see.
Oh, yeah.
This is the same type of blowout we'll see.
Right. Yeah. I thought you were saying, like, Detroit without Blake against Duke this year.
No. They would.
You're saying that
Skull love Duke.
Yes, in that scenario, Milwaukee is Cleveland, and Detroit is Duke. And they would still get destroyed by 30. Correct.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. It sucks. I mean, there's just nothing to say. The only thing I could say is that I hope the NBA, if Milwaukee goes up 3-0, I just hope they end the series prematurely. Just mercy rule this thing.
So I saw a lot of people say that, like, Bucks in three.
Yeah.
I had, like, Bucks and a half.
Yeah, right? Like, I'm scared, because, like, all it takes is one freak's injury, and then Milwaukee's chances moving on to the finals are screwed, because they had to play these meaningless games in the first round, and that sucks.
I like how you put the S at the end of that. One freak's injury, like Greek freak's injury. I like that. That was very creative. I see what you did there. I liked it.
But even, I mean, to Middleton, to Bledsoe, whatever, it's just like, I don't want any of these guys to get hurt, but they have to play just by rule. Like, they can't. I mean,
Giannis played 23 minutes.
Yeah.
He still ended up grabbing 17 rebounds in 23 minutes, by the way. Yeah.
Outrageous.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not feeling good about my Toronto in the finals pick all of a sudden.
I have Milwaukee all the way through it right now. I'm so high on them.
Yeah.
Oh God, do we really have to close up our podcast with Boston, Indiana? I saw that game, but I wish I hadn't.
It's so bad. I did not watch it because I just knew, A, I was still mad about the Sixers, and B, I was trying to catch up on Game of Thrones, and C, I knew this was coming.
Yeah, you're right.
We said it. Right. Without Oladipo, they just don't have the offensive firepower. The Pacers.
Well, you said it. I was actually leaning a little bit towards Indiana because of the chemistry, but you know, this is a Houston Utah situation, right?
Yeah.
I mean, Indiana has all the defense that you could use, you need, or you could ask for, but they just don't have the offensive firepower.
Like,
I think Thaddeus Young was outstanding. Like, he was just playing the passing lanes, dropping down on the floor for loose ball. He was doing everything.
Five steals?
And they just couldn't do anything in the second half. Like, they were just toast. And there was no shot making. I kind of want to see what they've got in Aaron Holiday a little bit more. Like, it's at this point, you can't really lose anything.
Right.
I want them to give him 20 minutes off the bat, like, in game two, and see if he can do something.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's the problem. Just they don't have guys who can reliably create shots for themselves, except for Bogdanovic. And Oladipo is he's that go-to guy. Like, Tyreke Evans should be that, but for whatever reason, the Magic...
He's bad.
Yeah, like, you know, he had that great year last year, and when they signed him this summer, it was like, oh, that's a good fit. He could be the Oladipo off the bench, and they could have a similar type player for all 48 minutes, and he just... My sixth man of the year, my preseason sixth man of the year, let me down yet again. And Wes Matthews was a nice, you know, buyout pickup, but still just, he's not giving you what Oladipo did. Like, they have...
I just did not understand what he would do there.
Yeah.
Like, it would have made so much more sense if he had went to Philly.
Yeah, if he wanted... he wanted minutes. I get that. And, like, he's playing for his next contract, so I totally understand why he went there.
Well, does he also want round two? Because that means more minutes.
Right. Correct. Yeah, he would have been a very welcome addition to Philly, because Lord knows James Ennis has made a huge impact. Like, the Sixers had to play effing Jonathan Simmons for real minutes in game one, and look how that went. So, yeah, I wish both him and Wayne Ellington, but I'm not going to begrudge either of those guys. They went to playoff teams, they're playing more minutes, they're starters, They're just trying to rope-a-dope someone into giving them the mid-level exception this summer.
I mean, it's fine. I can appreciate Wayne Ellington signing with Detroit so he can have an up-close personal look at Giannis becoming just like a godlike presence. Right. Yeah, right.
Yeah,
that's
wanna,
fine.
You want to bow at the king before it's too late. Yeah.
Oh, man.
This series sucks. I don't think this is... Like, if I'm ranking the series in terms of what I'm watching moving forward...
Oh, yeah.
This might be dead last. Because, like, Milwaukee-Detroit's going to be a complete blowout every time. But at least, as you said, like, Giannis is probably going to do one thing per game, at least. Where it's just like, how did a human being accomplish this? Like,
yes. Yeah.
How did he go 75 feet or whatever, like 70 feet in one dribble? That's not allowed. But yeah, this is, I mean, this was a rock fight. It's 84-74 in the year 2019, where offenses have never been better. The Boston Celtics won a playoff game, scoring 84 points. The Indiana Pacers in the third quarter, they scored 8 points, right?
Yeah.
Ugh. This is why, I mean, once Philly locked itself out of seeing Boston in the first round, I floated on Twitter, would they be better off falling to four so they get the Pacers in the first round instead of the Nets?
Yep.
And
they would have.
Yeah, a lot of people were like, no, that's stupid. I'm like, have you seen the Indiana Pacers since Oladipo went down? I know they kept it together, at least at first, but like over the past month, the Pacers just, this is what happens to them. They have a good defense still. I mean, they held Boston at 84. That's impressive. That's a game you should win. If the Boston Celtics score 84 points, you should beat them. But they just don't have the offense to match the defense, and it sucks.
Yep. They don't have the offense, they have the on-ball creativity, playmaking. Like, look at, theoretically, if you threw, like, an elite playmaker into that group, not counting Oladipo in this, I get that he's, you know, a terrific scorer, but he's not an elite playmaker. You catch my drift?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, if they threw just one of those guys in, alongside, a healthy Oladipo, this team would be right up there with the Bostons and the Phillies and the Torontos and the Milwaukees.
For sure.
Like, they need so little, yet they still need so much, because what those guys would provide for them is the ability to just add layers to their offense. Right now, they just have nothing. It's basically dribble handoffs and spot ups. That's about it. You don't have this constant, you know, presence who can will himself to the free throw line and will himself to 27 points. And I'm frankly beginning to become a little bit worried about Miles Turner in terms of his offensive development. Defensively, he's there.
Mm-hmm.
But I was looking for more, man. Yeah. When you have that shooting ability, and when you're 6'11", long arm, and you're also pretty athletic, I don't know. I'm looking for him to do more, and he's just constantly not doing so.
Yeah. 6 shot attempts in game one is not going to cut it. But I think a lot of that's just the Al Horford factor.
Well, I mean, when you look at the regular season, right?
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, Depot played, 36 games. That's it.
Yeah.
Turner played 74. He finished with, like, an average of 13.7 rebounds.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's just not good enough.
Yeah.
And I mean, he had so much time and to get acclimated to being, you know, a more central figure. There's just no reason why he shouldn't be putting up, like, 18-8.
Yeah.
At the very least.
Yeah.
Like, that should be his floor.
Right. I mean, that's what you're hoping for. Like John Collins numbers, basically.
Right. Yeah. He. Oh, God, he was so good. He was at almost 20-10 this year.
Yeah, I know. It was like 19-9, right?
Yeah.
But you're right. I mean, that's what you're paying him all of that money for. It was like, 4 years, $84 million, I want to say, something like that?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. You're not paying for 6 points in a playoff game. Or and 5 points. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah,
that's what I'm saying. Like, I think maybe this is the wake up call. Maybe after game one,
I hope so.
Like, maybe he realized, oh, there's really nobody here to take shots.
Right,
like, I can take whatever I want. Like, it's a complete green light for me.
Yeah, Yeah.
I hope he does it. That's the one thing that would intrigue me to watch game two. That's literally everything that would intrigue me.
I know. There's, yeah. Is this the NBA TV game tonight? No, it's not. It's the TNT game. Oh, gross. Oh,
wow.
Well, it's because Detroit-Milwaukee is the NBA TV game.
Well, the Milwaukee game is NBA TV? Yeah, really?
Because they know it's not going to be competitive.
I guess. It still, even so, it's Giannis. Like, yeah, give him prime time.
Yeah, I mean, I know.
All right.
All right, before we wrap up, I'm going to spring one thing on you. We need to talk about Luke Walton. Because last time we recorded, I believe, was Friday morning. So Luke Walton got... they said it was like a mutual separation, right? I don't think they called it a firing, but he wanted out of his contract, and the Lakers obliged him. And the Kings quickly pounced. So Luke Walton is... He went from one very stable organization in the Lakers to another very stable organization in the Sacramento Kings. And he is now the Sacramento Kings head coach. How do you like the fit there? Would you have liked to see the Kings run a more comprehensive search for their next head coach? Or do you think it's cool that, like, Vlade was just like, we want Luke Walton. Let's just go get him right away.
So, actually, I will say, under normal circumstances, I would always go for, like, the big coaching search.
Yeah.
But this is Luke Walton, who's got a pretty good resume, who's young, has a lot of potential as a coach, who got screwed over in LA big time.
Yeah.
And who will have such a big chip on his shoulder
yeah.
for the next couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
When you put all that together, I don't mind that the Kings went out and got their guy. Like, this is one of the few times where I've been like, yeah, I get it.
Yeah.
That makes sense. That's fair. And besides, like, maybe, you know, with not having Dave Yeager, who apparently presented some issues in the locker room, or not in the locker room, but in, like, in the front office, and, like, just didn't fit with the organizational structure, maybe this is actually a very welcome addition for a franchise that's trying to stabilize themselves.
Yeah.
I don't trust Vlade's, let's say, view on talent necessarily.
you don't think Marvin Bagley should be a small forward?
I know. I really, really, I can't even I can't overstate how much I wouldn't want that. But the thing is, right now they actually have a pretty competent roster.
Yeah.
By sheer magic, I guess. It just came about. And Luke, I feel, is just a perfect guy to run that. Like, there isn't going to be a LeBron or some sort of franchise-altering 35-year-old guy that's going to come into that team and dictate everything. Like, he's going to have time to work now.
Yeah.
Which is interesting.
I hope so.
Right. Right. And if not, then he'll be out of a job in about 3 months, because that's what the Kings sometimes do.
Right. Right. Well, working in his favor is that he and Vlade were teammates for 15 games in 2004-2005. I just had to go back and look this up, but they did play together for the Lakers. So they
Bros forever.
Yeah.
Bros so forever.
They have some familiarity there, which is nice. But, yeah, I mean, I don't mind this, because I think Luke would have been snapped up pretty quickly regardless. So if you're identifying him as your top target, which they seemingly did even before Luke got fired.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, you know, go like, as a Bulls fan, who would you rather have, Luke Walton or Jim Boylan?
I was actually just going to say something of that vein. Yep. You know what I was going to say? I was going to say the old Chicago fan in me would have pointed out very, very astutely that both Luke Walton and David Griffin were available correct. At the same time.
Yeah.
And coming through this summer with the remaining contract of John Paxson and Jim Boylan, who will then be extended, obviously.
Right.
Is probably not a great look when you had two wildly more talented and competent people available.
Hey, but Jordan Boylan preaches toughness, and he taught them how to run burpees, so
yeah,
he's a much better fit.
Mm-hmm. That's just wonderful, and I can't wait to hear him talk about it for 82 games.
I'm excited to see Luke with De'Aaron Fox. I think that could be a lot of fun. I don't think he needs to change much schematically from what Yeager did. Like, just run a super fast system. You have the horses. Let them run. Just don't bog down the half court and don't play Marvin Bagley at the three. And you're going to be in pretty good shape.
I can't believe you haven't made one connection yet. Or maybe it's been made on Twitter. I just haven't seen it. So what did Vivek call Buddy Hield when he traded for?
Stauskas was the shoots like Steph, big like Clay, right?
I think it was, but and then, Buddy Hield was Stephen Curry 2.0.
Ah, yes. Yes, yes, yes.
Who coached Steph Curry?
Touche. Touche. Yeah, there we go. I mean, hey, I'm not even going to make fun of Buddy Hield because he had a hell of a season good this year. Yeah.
There's nothing there. I'm just saying I could see why that would like add to it. Yeah.
Well, if nothing else, hopefully Luke just forgets everything that happened in the last 3 years. Like, just washes the Lakers
out of the way.
Yeah. Yeah. But, like, he does have that experience from the Warriors system. So he can bring those qualities to the Kings, and I'm sure that makes him attractive to the Kings. Like, they want to set a championship culture. Unfortunately, what they probably don't realize is that it starts at the top with your ownership and front office, which, given the instability there,
ownership is the biggest advantage in sports.
It really is. And, like, again, I hate to keep going back to the Clippers, but, like, look at the Clippers. Look at how quickly they've turned around that culture since Steve Ballmer took over. It's not a coincidence. Yep.
Can I make a prediction?
Yeah.
We were talking about Seth Curry and his future.
Mm-hmm.
I think he ends up with the Kings and his old buddy Luke. And Luke knows his game, and Luke knows his brother. There's a connection there.
Yeah. Oh, man.
They could use more shooting off the bench.
I would like that a lot.
And he was in Sacramento previously.
Yeah.
So they know his game.
Yeah. That's a good call. I dig it. All right, that's a good place to wrap up. Although apparently Dwayne Casey just said he's hoping Blake Griffin returns tonight, for what it's worth. So,
no, don't do it. Yeah. Come on.
But maybe the NBA TV game will be the game to watch over the brick fest that is Indiana-Boston. But everyone, I hope you've enjoyed the start of the playoffs. Keep watching. We'll keep pumping out some episodes. In the meantime, follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes, so please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. We're now being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek, and I was joined, as always, by Morten Jensen. Mort, have a good one. Stay clear of those Infinity War spoilers, man.
I am so, so annoyed. The internet right now infuriates me. Why would the internet post spoilers right now? I get it. I know why, but it still sucks.
I appreciate the heads up. Yeah, sorry, Endgame spoilers. I got the
Endgame. Yeah, should we just give a heads up to our listeners as well?
Yeah.
Because I assume that there are a lot of Marvel fans out there.
Yeah.
So apparently someone got got into like a press screening or whatever, I don't know how, but someone got into a screening of the movie earlier and apparently recorded it on their phone and then went home and actually edited out the most spoiler things during like a 5-minute reel.
Mm-hmm.
And that video is spreading. Thankfully, I have not seen it. I only seen a thumbnail, which I wish I hadn't seen.
Yep.
And The Verge wrote an article about it, like, some people did this, and out there.
No.
And so, they wrote an article. They didn't obviously link to it. Like, they just warned people.
Yeah.
And it also coincided with the Russo brothers, who, like, directed Endgame.
Yeah.
Coming out and saying, don't spoil Endgame.
Nice.
So, and these people will post, like, it's spreading like wildfire on the web. And, like, people will link to that video under major accounts like Vogue and Shams, and even if it's not movie related, they will just post it there because they know like they have millions of followers and whatnot.
Yeah.
And people will click on tweets and respond. So just heads up, guys, it's a week away or so.
Yeah.
Go into like media lockdown mode.
Yep.
Just limit your time on Twitter and especially Facebook.
Yep.
And try to get out clean on the other side.
Yeah. Yeah. One more week. And
one more week.
Same thing with Game of Thrones. If and when that ever leaks, Do not post it anywhere. Don't be that guy or that girl.
Don't be that guy or that girl or that dog or whatever. It doesn't matter. Dolphin. I don't know. Yeah. Just don't be that dolphin.
Indeed. Yeah. All right. Catch you later, Bort.
Catch you later, Brian.